Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Canty, you're very lucky that I stopped doing the weather updates about 10 days ago, because today it looks like you could get your arc ready.
Yeah, you'd have your work cut out for you today trying to keep people updated on what's going on out there. It is an absolute mess. I woke up this morning, man. I thought that I was building a lake in the backyard. It's unbelievable how much rain is coming down.
Yeah, no, it certainly is bad. And Rick, we say good morning to you. Did you guys have a nice Easter weekend?
Good morning, David. Yeah, I mean, it was, they call it a weekend. It was just a continuation of the rest of the week. But yeah, kids had a great time. Easter Bunny hit some eggs. They got a bunch of chocolate, got all hopped up on sugar and everything else. We ate our faces off. So yeah, I mean, all in all, good weekend. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, it was uneventful. You know, we didn't do a ton. I went for a nice walk yesterday, though, which was lovely.
Well, look at you.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't see that happening today. I think the big.
You know what I find?
Go ahead.
You know what I find, David? And this
what
is
do you
the,
find?
We talk about, you know, trying to get into a routine. You know, like try to get yourself through the day, have a routine. What I found that actually works well, and now mine revolves mostly around food, like what we're going to bake, what we're going to eat, is trying to find something each day to look forward to. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like to get you through the day, try to find something that you like. Maybe it's an episode of O's, whatever it ends up being. Maybe it's, you know, you're going to make brownies, whatever it is. It does actually doesn't help a lot, but it definitely helps a little bit.
Yeah. Some kind of normalcy, right? Just something that gets you through your day. That's somewhat normal that you can count on to happen every single day. I would agree with that. I think that's fair.
Well, not even that though. Like it kind of excites you a little bit. Like for us, I mean, for the most part, for us, it's usually sports. Like I can't wait. I can't wait till I can turn on the TV and watch the Mets, or I can't wait to turn on the TV and watch whatever it is, NHL playoffs. We don't have that right now. So like I had someone tweet me this weekend that he's been listening to the show. I'm not sure if you saw the tweet or not. And he's heard me talking about Cassie baking.
Yeah, the guy
so
that baked bread.
He decided he was going to bake some. How good did that bread look?
It looked delicious.
He did an unbelievable job.
It looked delicious.
Probably took up his whole weekend. He got to bake, and then he got to eat his face off. I mean, that's, I don't know, just little things like that. It seems like it helps us. I'm not sure it'll help everybody, but it helps us get through the days.
Yeah, and anything that can keep you focused and give you something to look forward to. Do you have that, Chris? Is there that thing that you're enjoying every single day?
Yeah, Dave. I mean, I'm trying to add a little structure to my day by working out early in the afternoon, so that's kind of been the thing that I've tried to get into lately, just trying to get healthier, you know, doing something constructive so I can come out of this quarantine, you know, on the positive end of things. You know what I'm saying? I think that's
yep.
That's really what it is. It's about fixing your mind on trying to improve some area of your life because you have so much downtime. And I saw a meme on social media that says if you don't come out of this quarantine with a new skill or having read a new book or having developed a new habit, you didn't lack time. You just lack discipline. So for me, it was just about trying to figure out what is something that I want to improve on and focus on working on that.
All right, let's get into some of the sports from the weekend and moving forward. We're now a week and a half away from the NFL draft, and we have I'm not going to give you the full read right now, but let me just whet your appetite a little bit. Starting at noon today, we have a draft challenge that is starting on the station. So right off the top at noon, I'm going to give you the read for this, and I think both of you are going to be very, very excited by that. So did either of you happen to watch the horse competition last night? Chris, we'll start with you. Did you happen to watch the horse competition last night?
I tried to watch the horse competition last night, Dave. I wanted to give it a shot. I hung in there for about a half an hour, but I just couldn't continue to watch, Dave, because you're not talking about, you know, apples to apples in terms of the facilities that the different participants had to work with. I mean, I'm sitting there watching Mike Conley in this beautiful indoor home gym, and then I'm watching Trey Young take jumpers from his driveway. It's like it's not the same thing. So from that standpoint, and you couple that with the whole Skyping in because you didn't really have a real video crew, it just made it a tough watch for me.
Yeah, it was Rick? Tough. I watched it. I watched it, and I tried to pay attention to it. I mean, I had it on the TV. But yeah, it wasn't easy. Some of them were all right. I mean, the fact that, you know, Mike Conley, I mean, with both hands is, is still ridiculous, I thought was pretty impressive. I mean, LaVine was impressive. Chauncey Billups coming back the way he came back was impressive. But
let me tell you who was not impressive. The funny part, Paul Pierce.
Yeah. That was tough. It was funny. Chauncey Billups was busting Trae Young's chops. He's like, okay, we're going to do a free throw. And Chauncey's looking like, it looks like it's 8 feet. That doesn't look like a real free throw, but you have no idea because he's shooting in his driveway.
Yeah. Chris, you said you watched about 30 minutes of it. I think that's about 27 minutes more than I was able to. I couldn't physically make it through it. I had no interest in it. I wanted to. I turned it on at 7 o'clock. I saw Chris Paul come on. I think it was Tamika Catching.
She
shot as well. And I was just like, I can't. I just, and it kind of made me sad because it was something I was interested in. I thought going in, I turned it on. I had no interest. And then I started to realize, and maybe I'm wrong, how far away we are from sports. Like, if that's where we are on April 13th, is it realistic to think that we're going to get back to any normalcy in sports in the next 6 to 8 weeks? I don't know.
Well, it feels like it's going to be a while, Dave. I think the last sporting event that we had live was March 12th. So, you know, it's a full month since we've done the self-quarantine and the social distancing. But, I mean, from what it sounds like, it's going to be a few weeks before anybody else even entertains the idea of live sports coming back. But I think we all recognize why it's necessary. But in looking at the horse challenge last night, I don't want to be overly critical of it because it's at least the NBA and the players trying to find something, some way to try to put a live event on to keep folks at home entertained, because there's only so much Netflix that you can watch. I mean, at some point you run out of content, and they're just trying to find new and creative ways to put on live events, you know, with a sports-centric theme.
At least getting creative.
Yeah, no, I don't blame anyone. I'm not saying the NBA is at fault or the players are at fault. I couldn't watch it. The quality of video was so terrible. I tried to stick with it, and I think I made it about 5 minutes. It was not enjoyable for me. And I wanted to, and that's the thing that I found to be most disappointing, Rick, is that I wanted to watch it, and I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you wanted to watch it and you were excited to watch it, you probably battled through it. I mean, if it was something that you were, you know, interested in, you probably turned it on, watched it for a couple minutes, and then realized that it wasn't great. But I mean, we're at a point now where we're starving for live content. And, you know, if you're an NBA fan, or if you're, you know, whoever it was, Chris Paul, Trae Young, whatever it was, I mean, I'm sure there's some people that liked it. I didn't love it, but I mean, I battled through it.
I can't imagine there's a whole lot of people listening right now that went through that last night. We're like, boy, that was very enjoyable.
No, I can't imagine that either, Dave. But there was something on yesterday afternoon that I didn't enjoy watching.
I enjoyed that as well. I enjoyed that greatly.
That was the replay of Super Bowl 42, and the Giants went out to Arizona and stomped out the then 18-0 Patriots. So that was cool rewatching that. But Dave, reliving that final drive from the Giants, man, it was really unbelievable, because there were so many plays that could have went the other way for the Giants. You know, the one ball where David Tyree looked like he cut the route short and Asante Samuel got both of his hands on it, but it sailed out of bounds. Like, that could have went the other way. Obviously, you know, Mike Carey swallowing his whistle when Eli Manning was in the grasp in the pocket, and then that big ball to David Tyree. But, I mean, even the one where Steve Smith on third down had to tiptoe the sideline to convert for a first down in the red zone, like, any of those plays could have gone the other way, and that would have changed the Giants, you know, chances of being able to score that go-ahead touchdown. So it was unbelievable just kind of reliving that moment, knowing what's going to happen, but still having a little bit of anxiety just because there were so many plays that could have gone either way on that last drive.
Yeah, I can't believe that I made it through that game. Like, in watching it and seeing how incredibly stressful it was, even years later, 12 years later now, and watching it still produces a lot of stress. I can't believe I made it through. Rick, I mean, you watched that game. You're not, you know, a fan of either team, and you probably rooted for the Giants just because you can't stand the Patriots. But, I mean, that the stress level during that game, and that's got to be, would you say, Rick, that is one of the great games in the history of sports?
Yeah, I mean, you can make the argument as far as, you know, everything surrounding that game, 18-0 Patriots team. You know, what the Giants were able to do during that playoff run. I mean, yeah, I couldn't even imagine. If I was a Giants fan, I mean, I had no dog in the fight except I hate the Patriots. But, right. I mean, for you, I could not imagine sitting through that game.
Well, I mean, you've heard the stories. By the end of the game, I was completely naked. I was a sweaty mess. It was like nothing I've ever experienced. No, I'm not kidding. Like I reacted in that game, and I'll tell you, that whole postseason was like that. The entirety of the, because the Cowboys game, I was a crazed lunatic. The Packers game was one of the great games you've ever seen. And then to cap it off with that, with an 18-0 team, and you forget how good, I mean, the Giants defensive front was so unbelievable, Chris, in that game between Tuck and Umanura and Cofield and Strahan. I mean, they were unbelievable in that game.
And don't forget Jay Alfred, who ended that game with the sack on Tom Brady on that last drive. I mean, that showed the NFL the new blueprint for how to have success defensively, right? It's not about being able to have guys on the back end that can lock people up in coverage, because any good wide receiver, if they have enough time, is going to create separation. It's about being able to limit the quarterback's time to get the ball off, and that has to speak to you having a competent pass rush. And the Giants showed one of the most talented teams in the National Football League in the Patriots. They shut them down. I remember Tom Brady was joking after he heard the Giants defense say that they were going to hold them to 17 points or less. And then the Giants went out there and held them to 14 points. And wasn't that the year that Tom Brady and Randy Moss had, what, 25 connections for touchdowns?
Yep. I think Brady threw 50 touchdowns, and I think Moss caught 25 of them, I believe.
We're only going to score 17 points? Okay.
Yeah, they scored 14 points.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they didn't quite make it to 17.
No, but, I mean, that just goes to show you, man, if you're able to cut the head off the snake in today's game, if you're able to affect the passer, then you're going to have a pretty good chance of being able to stop offenses. So I think that's really what teams are starting to shift toward, is being able to have guys up front that can get after the quarterback, and you can never have enough. You know, you got to be able to roll those guys in order for them to have the same kind of impact in the fourth quarter that they have in the first quarter.
Dave, let me ask you a question. So, yeah. I mean, you're sitting through this playoff run, right? And some, I mean, unbelievable wins for your New York Giants. Now, when you get to the Super Bowl and you realize what's ahead of you, I mean, what the Patriots have done the entire season, I mean, the way that they're winning games, was the reason why you were so nervous is just because you felt like, you know, with what you've seen already, that there was something special brewing? Like, did you almost feel like this was just meant to be when you're watching that Super Bowl game?
I don't know how I felt at the time. I mean, at the time, it's the Super Bowl. So before anything else, it's as stressful and crazy and nerve-wracking as anything. I mean, any Super Bowl is like that. So that's the start. Then you realize that this is an undefeated juggernaut, a team that's going, you know, 60 minutes away from being considered the greatest team in the history of sport. And then you start to see how close you are. See, I don't think I was crazed to start the game, don't get me wrong. But I think as the game went on, when I thought, wait a minute, we could actually win this thing. Wait a minute, this is within striking distance. I think the longer it went on and stayed close, the more crazy I got, because I realized this could actually happen. And I remember, and there's so many plays. I don't know if you guys watched the game or not yesterday, but and I forget. I knew it, of course, it happened, and I forgot it. And then I saw it again yesterday. I was like, I don't know how. I think it was the second quarter, and Ahmad Bradshaw was given the ball. It was a perfect handoff, and he just fumbled it, like horrendously.
Yep.
Put it on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what Patriot was, Chris. You might remember. Had it. He jumped on it. And I, for the life of me, have no idea. It squeezed through his arms. Bradshaw kind of jumped on top of that guy.
Was it Jarvis Green, Dave? I'm trying to think.
Don't remember.
Okay.
You could be right. And he kind of pulled it away, and it's like, oh my God, if that play doesn't happen, I don't know that they win this game. There's just so many of those plays during the course of that game where if this happened or if that didn't happen or if Asante Samuel got his feet down or just so many different plays that, I mean, that game, it stresses me out every time I watch it. I know the result before I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, I went into that game wishing that both teams would lose, Dave. I mean, the Giants beat us, obviously, on their way to the Super Bowl. They came into Texas Stadium in the divisional round after we had the first round bye and promptly took care of that piece of business, then went up to Green Bay. But I saw that game, and then I looked at the Patriots being undefeated. It was like, there's no way that I want either one of these teams to win. I was like, is there any way possible that this thing could end in a tie and nobody wins? Because it was a losing scenario, no matter how I looked at it, because it's either my division rival at the time wins that game because I was with the Cowboys, or the undefeated Patriots end up matching what we saw from the early 70s Dolphins. So I wish that both teams could lose that game.
You know what, though, Dave? The reason why I asked the question is just because as an athlete, and I think Chris has talked about this when they made their run to the Super Bowl, is like there's certain seasons, certain moments where you just feel like it's meant to be. You know what I mean? I was interested to know if maybe like as a fan you kind of feel that same feeling that you know us as players feel in the locker room.
I never felt that. I would say that the Patriots fans probably felt that more than the Giants fans. I never felt that this was a meant to be kind of moment. And I don't know. I'm not great at realizing things in the moment either. I get so crazed and so wrapped up that I think I lose my composure. So I don't think I'm great to look back on and ask a question like that. But I mean, if you think about that run, and I mean this, and I mean this sincerely, Rick, that could be one of the greatest runs in the history of the NFL. I mean, Tampa, fine, they're not a great team. You beat them on the road. You know, you give them a little credit for that one. You go into Dallas, a team that beat you up twice in the regular season. They were 13-3. You beat them there. You go into Green Bay. They're 13-3. It's minus 20 degrees at the wind chill. Everyone thinks the coach's face is going to fall off. I mean, Plaxico Burress gives you one of the great, really gives you one of the great games in the history of postseason football. Eli outduels Favre and Tynes kicks the winning field goal after having multiple attempts. And then you face an undefeated juggernaut in the Patriots. And you beat them and had some of the most iconic plays in the history of the game during that game. Like, I don't know that anything like that is ever duplicated again. And I will say it. I think that is one of the greatest runs. I won't even say in football history. I think that is one of the greatest runs in the history of sports.
Listen, I can't sit here and disagree with you. I mean, when you go all in and you take, what they were able to do on the run to the Super Bowl and then, I mean, you couple that with the fact between, you know, Eli doing what he did to escape what should have been a sack to David Tyree catching the ball on the top of his helmet. I mean, I don't care what anyone wants to say. I mean, that Patriots team in that moment was the best team of all time. I mean, 18-0. I mean, how they won games. I mean, this is what drives, I think, Chris crazy is when people say Eli Manning's not a Hall of Famer. Just go back to his two runs to win Super Bowls. I mean, they're incredible runs. I mean, you start listing off the teams that they beat and how they beat them. I mean, it's incredible.
But, Rick, I think that's case in point for one of the things that we always talk about the importance of in pro sports, which is culture and chemistry. I mean, there's no way you can look at the New York Giants back in 2007 and say from a talent standpoint, man for man, they were better than the Dallas Cowboys or that they were better than the New England Patriots. They weren't. Not from a talent standpoint. I know when I was with the Cowboys, we had, 13 Pro Bowlers that year. 13 of them. And we crushed the Giants both times in the regular season. Like, we were a supremely confident team. There was no way that we thought in our minds that the Giants could come into Texas Stadium and beat us. But guess what? They did it. And they did it together as a team. And it just reminds me of one of those truisms that I heard from Al Groh when I was in college and from Bill Parcells when I came into the NFL. And that is, the best players don't always make the best team, but the best team always wins. It's about being able to play together. It's about being able to rely on one another, to trust one another. And it was clear that they did that at a higher level than anybody else in the playoff field in 2007. And they proved it by beating the Cowboys on the road and by going to the Super Bowl in beating the undefeated Patriots.
So what were those three teams combined? 13, 13, and 18 is what? 16 and 18 is 34 and 6.
Yep.
And that doesn't include the postseason. So those were, well, I guess it includes the Patriots, but not the other two teams. So I mean, 34-6, you beat three of the, I mean, it's daunting to just even think about. And you know what else happened to me as I'm watching the game yesterday, Rick? I'm becoming frustrated with the current Giants because I realized that at 10 years ago, there was so much excitement and nervousness and all the emotions that go along with wins and losses. And now you watch the Giants and you're just like, ugh. Four wins, five wins. We talk about six wins. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, welcome to my life, Dave. Are you enjoying it? I mean, welcome to the life of a Jets fan at this point. Yeah, I mean, of course you're frustrated. I told you this a couple weeks ago. I felt the same way watching those Knicks games. Like watching when the Knicks were competitive. Now, you know, what we get a chance to watch as Knicks fans drives you crazy. But I mean, that's where you're at. And that's why we'll spend the next, 10 days leading up to the draft, talking about what the Giants are going to do with the fourth overall pick. You had the second, the sixth, now the fourth.
Yeah.
Not a great 3 years.
No, no. If you have a top six selection in three consecutive drafts, something is clearly wrong with your organization. Let's go to Chris and Bethpage. Chris, lead us off on a Monday. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, Dave, I had to chime in because I'm just like you. I really can go toe-to-toe with you as far as my Giant fandom. I'm 57 years old, seen and been to it all. And let me tell you something about that run. First of all, and you're right, it is the greatest sports run in the history of sports. 11 wins away from home after they lost that opening night to the Cowboys, if you remember. 11 straight wins away from home in accomplishing that run. So that's an amazing thing. Another thing, I don't know if you mentioned it, biggest one-yard game in the history of Giant football, Brandon Jacobs, 4th and 1, if you remember, on that drive.
Yeah, of course, the 4th and 1 on right. the final drive, yes.
Right.
Toomer caught the ball, which was like a half a yard shy of the first down, right. And then I think it was a timeout taken, and then Jacobs plunged forward for a yard. Yep.
Right, a couple other things. And, Chris, while I have you, in the 2011 Super Bowl, you know, whatever, what was going – let me ask you something. What was the mindset when Bradshaw went into the end zone instead of just pulling up? You know, he pulled up, then he fell into the end zone. What were you guys thinking? He was supposed to stop, right? You guys wanted to kick the field goal. Everyone knew the Patriots were going to let you score. Is that correct? I just want to know, what was the mindset on the sidelines when he went in the end zone? And then also – how was your heart beating when Rob Gronkowski almost caught that ball when it seemed like an eternity in that desperation at the end?
Yeah, that ball hung up there forever. But, I mean, for us, defensively, we wanted the game to be on our shoulders. Like, so okay. When Bradshaw went into the end zone, we're like, okay, we got the lead. Now it's up to us to hold on to it. Our mentality was go out there and hunt. Like, as a defensive line, we felt like that game was going to come down to our ability to affect Tom Brady. And that's exactly what happened. They had the blueprint from the 2007 run, so we knew we could go out there and do it. So, yeah, even though Bradshaw didn't do what Tom Coughlin wanted him to do in that situation, I mean, we still felt fairly confident that we were going to be able to close that thing out.
Right, because that one was also the same thing, though. I mean, what would have been the criticism, though, had they scored the Patriots, had they come down and scored? Don't you think that would have led to heavy criticism that they didn't stop? I mean, it was a layup having Tynes kick the field goal on the last play of the game. That's all I'm saying. You know, that's why, as a Giant fan, I remember watching it and going, you know, Belichick's no idiot. He wanted to, you know, let you guys score. And I was just thinking, you know, man, why didn't you just go down? And now we had to endure, you know, Tom Brady with the ball in his hand and it's funny, too, because that's what happened in 2007, if you remember. He threw a couple passes downfield that if Randy Moss catches them, if he was down there on the line, Brady threw unbelievable passes. If Moss catches one of those balls, and he almost did, they can, you know, Gostkowski could kick a field goal to tie that game.
Oh, yeah, so, Chris, you're talking about the one where they rolled him out to the right, and then he threw it back across the field downfield when Randy Moss got behind Corey Webster. Yeah, I remember that play. But, I mean, listen, for our defensive line, I mean, it was just the mentality that we had. And you also got a couple of the fact that the team had a lot of money invested in that defensive front. So it's like one of those things when you talk about who gets the criticism. If we don't finish off the drill, if we don't keep the Patriots out of the end zone on that final drive, I mean, the criticism would have been on the defensive line, even though Bradshaw shouldn't have ran in for a touchdown.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Bradshaw would have been killed, though. I mean, to this day, if he doesn't go in and they kick a field goal, you guys never had to go back on the field. So, yeah, you would have gotten some of the heat because they scored on the last drive, but he would have been killed for going in at all.
Yeah, Dave, you say that, but, I mean, Bradshaw was around for the 2007 run, so I don't know how much they would have killed him on that one. I think that they would have put more criticism on the defensive line.
Rick,
like,
what do you
think? Went through that four-game losing streak, it wasn't criticizing what was going on the offensive side of the ball. People were killing what we were doing defensively.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it would have been a convenient excuse if all of a sudden Tom Brady marches on the field and they, you know, end up winning the football game. But, I mean, the reality isn't what Chris is talking about. You're going to either one way or another. He's going to go down and he's going to score, or your defense is going to stop him. I mean, you spent the first couple minutes of the show going over, like, all the different plays that led into the Giants winning that game. Like, if they go the other way, that we're sitting here having a different conversation. That for me, watching these games back is the most amazing thing.
Yeah, how many championships are won where a team never has that moment or many of those moments, right? Even the 98 Yankees had the moment where they trailed the Indians 2 games to 1. Every team has those moments outside of a very infrequent club that just, you know, runs their way to a Super Bowl. Look, I mean, Chiefs had those moments. That Tyreek Hill play is one of those moments. The miss to Emmanuel Sanders is one of those moments. Every team has that moment where they go to win a championship, and you look at that play, that moment, you say, yeah, that's the one that put them over the top.
Yeah, and it's amazing to me. I mean, we sit here and we talk about legacies and everything else, and who gets credit, who gets the most credit, and, you know, Tom Brady's, you know, 6-3 in Super Bowls or whatever it is, and then you actually get a chance to watch the Super Bowls, and it's like, well, you know, if this play goes one way or if that play, like, there's so many more things involved in winning or losing than just, you know, one player or one play.
But if you think about those Super Bowls that Tom Brady lost, what's the one thing that they all have in common? The defensive line affecting the outcome of the game. Because you couldn't convince me Brady wouldn't have marched down the field and scored had Brandon Graham not got that strip sack at the end.
Yeah. What, did he throw 500 pressed. Yards in that game?
Yeah, I think he set a Super Bowl record, whatever it was.
Yeah, they couldn't stop him. What if Tom Brady catches that pass on the right sideline? I mean, there's so many little plays in all.
Well, Giselle already
games.
Told you her husband can't throw it and catch it.
Did you see when they were, Chris, yesterday? Rick, did you watch Super Bowl 42 yesterday or no?
I was in and out. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot going on.
So they were going through, like, Celebrity Row. I forgot that Jenny McCarthy dated, what's his face? Oh, I can't think of his name now. Jim Carrey. Because they were going through, like, Celebrity Row, and they showed Giselle. They're like, there is Giselle Bundchen. And then they showed, and then there's Jim Carrey, who's, of course, dating Jenny McCarthy. I was like, oh, I forgot. I forgot they ever dated. And they were going through all of Celebrity Row. You know what I also love from that game, Chris? Peyton's reaction when Eli threw the touchdown.
Yes.
Peyton was so excited.
You could see him up there, because Peyton won it the year before, right?
Yes.
They beat the Chicago Bears. Yep. So, yeah, like, it was just like they went back-to-back with winning Super Bowls, and you could see that he was genuinely happy for his little brother, the fact that he gets to hold up the Lombardi Trophy. Because, Dave, let's face it, early on in Eli's career with the Giants, there was a lot of criticism that maybe Ernie Accorsi didn't make the right decision in trading all of those draft picks in order to get him.
Yeah.
People weren't sold on Eli Manning early.
No, and it's amazing to think because, you know, people said, well, he didn't have a great career, he did or he didn't or whatever the case may be. It was his fourth season. He won a Super Bowl in his fourth season.
It's crazy, right?
That's early on in his career.
It's really early, Dave. But, you know, fans are impatient, and when you give up that kind of draft capital, they want to see the return.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah, but listen to what we just Dave, I mean, just go through what we just talked about for the last 24 minutes, you know, with Eli being the right pick and then, you know, the success that he had. Winning a Super Bowl in his fourth year. I mean, you can argue who's more talented, Philip Rivers or Ben Roethlisberger or Eli Manning. But as far as his personality, who was best fit to play in New York City, it's hands down Eli Manning.
Yeah, it's not even close.
I mean, we just spent the last 24 minutes pretty much, I mean, directly criticizing why any professional team would focus solely on analytics. You can't just always be about analytics.
No, it goes way beyond
that. It can't be.
You're right. It goes way beyond.
It goes way beyond. Because in certain moments, certain players, I mean, I don't care how talented they are, they step up in big moments. They can handle the big moments. And some can't. I don't care how talented you are. It's how you react to that kind of pressure. And there's no number or, you know, war or analytic that can prove that.
Nope.
Now, Dave, that second first-round pick that they gave the Chargers, was that Sean Merriman in 2005?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So I think they gave up a third round pick as well, which turned into the kicker.
Nate Kading?
Yeah, from Iowa, right?
Yeah. I mean, so you could kind of get, like, if Eli gets out to a sluggish start his first couple of years, why fans would be a little impatient in terms of wanting to see the return on that investment.
Yeah, no, I understand it. And remember, the Chargers were so good right away.
The Chargers were good, not to mention Roethlisberger and the Steelers.
Right. Right. You know? Yeah. They won a Super Bowl when he was awful.
Exactly. But I mean, he's still a Super Bowl. He's still a Super Bowl winning quarterback.
He was. Rick, you laugh. He was unwatchable. It was like the horse competition. He was unwatchable.
Yeah, but he got put in a great situation with a great team.
You're right.
And a great defense.
You're right.
I mean, that's what for me is the most interesting part of some of these conversations. Just, I mean, it, don't forget too. I mean, how many, you would know this better than anyone, because since you're the, I mean, biggest Giants fan I know. I mean, it felt like, you know, how many times were they calling for, you know, Eli and Tom Coughlin to be done?
Coughlin felt like he was on the hot seat every single season. If they don't make the playoffs this year, and then they'd narrowly miss out, and then you'd go through the couple of days of, is he going to stay? Is he going to be gone? Is he going to stay? Is he going to be gone? Well, we'll give him one more year. And then he'd stay another year, and then they win a Super Bowl. And he bought himself. Yeah, it was unbelievable.
I mean, you're sitting here, I don't care what you believe or who you like and who you don't like. Or, I mean, if at the time you didn't like the deal, you thought that Ernie Accorsi was wrong, whatever. You got 210 consecutive games and two Super Bowls from Eli mm-hmm. Manning. Mm-hmm. Whatever you gave up was well worth it.
And two of well the greatest drives. I don't think there's anybody now, Chris. You don't think there's anybody now that looks at that trade and says it wasn't a great trade for the Giants?
No, I don't think anybody says that now. But you do have people that are saying, you know, Eli Manning doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame, and that the Giants' defensive line was really the reason why they won those Super Bowls. And I'm here to tell you, I was on one of those teams, and it wasn't the defensive line. It was Eli Manning carrying that team, kicking and screaming through the regular season and on through the postseason. We had our moments as a defense, but our overall defense that year was awful. All you got to do is go back and look at the metrics. We were awful. But Eli Manning in that passing attack was virtually unstoppable, Dave. I mean, they went up to Green Bay and sliced and diced that defense. I mean, a 15-1 Packers team looked like they had no shot.
What did they put up 38 points in that game?
What'd you say?
What'd they put up 38 points in that game?
Yeah, we scored 37. I think the final score was 37-20, and Dave, it wasn't that close.
Did the Giants get a Hail Mary at the end of the first half for the touchdown?
Yeah, Hakeem Nicks. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but that's one of those things where we just knew that we had something special with that team, Dave. You know, you talk about the Christmas Eve game against the Jets, and then the regular season finale, the game that got flexed to 8:30 against the Dallas Cowboys. We had to win both of those to get in, and we knew we had found our footing, we had found that rhythm, because remember earlier that year we had lost four straight games. Mm-hmm. We did a month of losing, and it was nobody that was coming to save the day. We had to find the answers in the guys that we had in that locker room. And it's just one of those things. When you face adversity, if you have the right people in leadership within an organization, it shows you that you can accomplish something really, really special. But that speaks to something that we always talk about on this show. New York is a different type of town when it comes to the kind of pressure that you face. It just is. And it takes a certain type of character, a certain type of leadership in order to sustain, you know, the performance, in order to ride the ebbs and flows and to still find a way to go out there and produce. It's just different, and not everybody is built for it.
All right, guys, there's everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands, avoid close contact with people who are sick, avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth, stay home when you are sick, cover your cough or sneeze, clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. I want to remind you can listen to us anywhere. Just click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play ESPN New York at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go. All right. I haven't given you any time to think about this, so I'll slowly ask the question. You guys take your time. If there was one game, we talk about the Giants and 2012 and the amazing run and the Super Bowl beating the 18-0 Patriots. That's probably the game that if I could go back and go to any game in the history of sport that I would go to. What would yours be? Chris, Rick, what would the one game that you could turn back time, whether you're alive or not, that you actually would be able to go to? Have you ever thought?
I have
about
one
that?
Game.
You have a game.
I mean, I would go. Yeah, I would go back to. I go back to 80 and watch the U.S. team beat Russia.
So it'd be the Russia one.
Yeah, that would be it.
Yeah, that was that game was special, huh? You know, that was shown on tape delay here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I went to it. I mean, I live in the same town as Mike Rizzioni. I grew up in the same town, so I feel like I was actually there because I've heard him talk about it so many times. But I mean. I mean, you say last night watching that game or yesterday watching that game, you still get nervous. Mm-hmm. I mean, you should have seen watching the movie Miracle. I mean, I still get goosebumps. My wife was like at the edge of her seat. I'm like, Cass, you know the U.S. wins, right? She's like, yeah, I'm so excited. I can't wait to see how this ends.
I can't. I totally
I can tell you
it.
How it ends.
Yeah, but you always think, like, is this going to be the time that that something happens? It's amazing to me that he pulled his goaltender, that Russia pulled maybe the greatest goalie in the world in that game.
Yeah, I mean, that's still... Yeah, I mean, you can still have an argument one way or the other. Yeah, I wouldn't have, to be completely honest.
Of course, who would do that?
But, I mean, this is uncharted territory for them, man. I mean, that team was virtually unbeatable.
They never lost.
They embarrassed NHL All-Stars, man.
They destroyed them. I love at the end of the game when, Craig Patrick turns to Herb Brooks, like, why doesn't he pull the goalie? They're like, he doesn't know what to do.
He has no idea what to do.
Yeah, he didn't know to pull the goalie.
And then the best part of that whole thing, though, is that they had to turn around. That wasn't the gold medal game. And that's what people...
No, they had to beat Finland,
sometimes,
right?
Sometimes forget. Yeah, they had to turn around after that. I mean, after just probably the greatest win of all times, turn around and then play another game and beat Finland and win the gold medal.
So all time, any game you could go to would be the 1980 U.S.-Russia game in Lake Placid. That's one of the greats. You know what we should do? We should open up the phone lines to this. 800-919-3776. What game, and it doesn't have to be now. You could be the 27 Yankees. You could be anything you want. What one game do you wish you could go to or could have gone to? Chris, what's your game that you'd like to have gone to?
Dave, it's a toss-up. It would be either to watch, the 98 Yankees? It would either be able to watch them win the World Series or the 2001-2002 Lakers with Shaq and Kobe.
Hmm.
It would come down to those two.
But is there one specific game in those? Was it the championship-defining game? Is that the one?
Yeah, I think I'd probably pick the championship-defining game, yeah, to see them actually get the hardware.
Yeah. How about the 86 Mets, Rick? Game 6 of the 86 World Series. Oh, similar to your game over the Russians, because they won game 6 and then they had to wait to come out and win game 7 also.
Yeah, and that's one of those games too. I mean, I was 5 years old at the time, but I can remember where I was. Like I can remember like sitting in my living room in Chicago watching that game. And still I get to this day. I mean, the fact that that ball went through Bill Buckner's legs to me is still, it's amazing that that actually happened.
I always felt badly for Buckner.
Well, he wasn't even supposed to be in there. I mean, they brought him in so he'd actually be on the field.
Right.
And then, of course, the ball, that's just the beauty of sports, too.
Right, the ball finds him.
He finds him and then gets through his legs, and they end up losing, and then they end up losing game 7, too.
Yep. No, but there's so many of those games that you look back on. I mean, I was at one. Two of them. I was at the 94 Rangers over the Devils, the Mateau game, and then a couple weeks later when they beat the Canucks in game 7, right? When this one will last a lifetime. So I've been to a couple of those games in my life.
Those are some of my favorite games. I don't like the Rangers, but I love Mike Richter. Like that save, I mean, that split save on the penalty shot against Pavel Bure is probably one of my favorite saves of all time.
But you didn't dislike the Rangers in 94, did you?
No, I didn't dislike that. I mean, I didn't dislike anybody, really. I mean, I was weird with sports when I was younger, especially hockey. I wasn't really because we moved around a lot. I mean, I was born in Maine, went back to Boston, moved to Chicago, came back to Boston. So I didn't really have a team at the time. I mean, I enjoyed going to the Garden to watch the Bruins. I just like goalies. And Richter was always, to this day, one of my favorites of all time.
People are lined up. They want to chat. 800-919-3776. We stumbled upon something here, guys. Angelo and Peekskill. What's the one game that you wish you could have gone to, Angelo?
Hey, Dave. I am a big Minnesota Vikings fan. I have been since I was a kid. And the Minnesota Miracle for me was the best game I think I've ever seen on a television in general. The way it ended, the way Stephon Diggs on no seconds left ran into the end zone. It was absolutely magnificent. I had tears in my eyes. I ran upstairs, flipped everyone off upstairs who was rooting against me. It was magical. I'll hang up and listen to what you guys have to say.
That was one of those, you didn't even have to be a sports fan, Chris, and you're watching that game and it happens and you just start screaming. Like that was one of those moments in sports.
Yeah, it was one of those moments. I felt bad for the kid, Marcus Williams. He was a rookie and just like one of those rookie mistakes at the most inopportune time because you feel like he cost his team a chance to advance. But more importantly, you cost Drew Brees an opportunity to compete for a championship.
Yeah.
Like that was a bad moment. Like I was just like, we were wondering whether or not that kid would be able to bounce back from that because he had a pretty good rookie year.
Yeah, no, he had a great rookie season, and but he did bounce back well from that.
No, he did. But I remember that was in question.
Well, and rightfully so. And I mean, how would you bounce back from something like that?
It wouldn't be easy.
No.
I mean, it would not be easy.
But knowing you the way you focus on every single thing, if you really thought that you were the reason that a team didn't go to the NFC Championship game, I think you specifically would have a hard time living with yourself.
No, I'd be ruined. I mean, you wouldn't find me for at least, a good month. I would be in solitary confinement where I wouldn't be able to do anything. But I mean, that's it. You make a decision at that point. I mean, he's only a rookie. You got to make a decision. You mean you choose to use it as motivation, or you let it eat away at you, and you never reach your full potential. And give the kid credit; he battled through it and had a good second year. And I mean, speaking of that game, the Minneapolis Miracle. What about the 3 years that the Saints have had?
It's been awful, man.
Oh my God.
It's been awful.
So they lost that, then they got hosed with the non-pass interference call.
Yep.
And then they lost this game to the Vikings at home, right?
Yep.
Oh. That's a brutal three-year run.
That's a rough 3 years. Rough 3 years.
Yeah, really rough. Let's go to Chris in the Bronx. Chris, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What is happening there,
Chris? I wish I could have been at...
Are you hammering the stairs? What's happening?
No, that's my window. That's whatever. 2003, the walk-off, boom, hitting the home run against the Red Sox.
That was something, huh? Can't do that. And thanks for the call, Chris. That's got to be one of yours, right? That home run from Boone?
Yeah, that was a nice one, Dave. That was a nice Yankees moment. No question about it. Or how about Derek Jeter and his 3,000th hit?
Yeah, that was special.
Home run? Come on, man.
Yeah, that was.
I mean, does it get any better than that?
But of course, Jeter. And I think Kay, they were live tweeting that the other night. They showed it on Yes, and Kay was live tweeting it, and he got the call so good. His call was amazing in that one, Rick. Do you remember his call?
No, I remember, yeah. I mean, were you surprised at
no.
all?
No.
With what Derek Jeter has accomplished throughout his entire career, that's how he get his 3,000 hit?
Some guys,
how he get his career.
Yeah.
Yeah, how perfect is that, though, Rick? Think about that, though, man.
But that's Derek Jeter. If there's one guy that we've seen in our lifetime that you say everything like that would happen the right way for, wouldn't it be Jeter?
Tom Brady?
Yes.
Tom Brady's in that same conversation. I guess that's why they're friends.
Yeah.
And why Jeter's letting him use his house while he's down in Tampa.
Yep. Yep.
Or Tampa.
I believe it's Tampa.
Tampa.
Which is, he's going to profit off this, really?
Well, why wouldn't he? I mean, I told you this. What do you mean? The day he signed... They were already using it. So if he trademarks it, at least he decides whether or not he wants to use it, as opposed to other people making T-shirts, them making money on it.
Yeah, he did Tampa Bay, and then he did Tampa Brady.
Yes,
yeah. Tampa Brady. Yeah,
Tampa Brady.
I guess Tom is not happy though with the. I mean, it's a beautiful house. I mean, it's a mansion, but he's a little upset right now. Apparently, from what I'm being told in Tampa, that there have been plenty of people. Like, he's got no privacy because you can pull up with a boat. So there's like people they just want to pull up and see the house. And see if they can see Tom and Giselle hanging out.
It's like a zoo. There's Tom Brady.
And on your left, we have Tom Brady.
Yeah,
right,
that's Lawrence Taylor. That's Lawrence Taylor.
You might see a Giselle Bundchen on the upper left corner there. All right, 800-919-3776. Now, today on ESPN Daily, you've probably heard boxing announcer Michael Buffer's rumbling catchphrase at every major boxing match. And if you haven't heard announcer Bruce Buffer's signature UFC Fight Night line, well, it's time. But you might not have heard how the most famous voices in fighting found out they were brothers much later in life. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. Rick, you know what's back tonight? There's two things that are back tonight that you'll be very excited about.
Give me something. With today's weather, you got to give me something to get excited about.
Yeah. Oh no, I have two things. I mean, with our brethren here, ABC Channel 7, The Bachelor. Listen to Your Heart. I'm going to watch that tonight.
Okay, you watch it tonight. I'm gonna DVR it. I'll watch it tomorrow. So don't ruin it for me tomorrow.
I wouldn't do that. What is that, like a 6-episode like quick shot? Right. It's not the full season that they typically do.
Yeah, this is a quick shot. I mean, they're dabbling in some new ideas.
And what is there, like, a music component to this tonight?
Yes. That's why it's called Listen to Your Heart. I think they put together, I'm not 100% sure. I kind of stayed away from reading too much into it because I want to be surprised. I think it's like they put together like their musical act. It's a man and a woman as a musical act. You know what I'm saying?
And then they what? They're just kind of locked together and we see if this takes off?
Yeah, kind of like the Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga vehicle. Star is Born.
I love that movie. Like
that. That's what this is supposed to be?
Hopefully with a better ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That ending still, I mean, you knew how it was going to end too, and it still choked me up.
You knew it was going to end like that?
It's a remake.
Well, I never saw the original.
Yeah,
it was in the original.
Yeah,
it's like, Rick is like, Dave asked him, did you know Titanic was going to end that way?
Well, Titanic is different. Titanic I knew ended like that. I didn't know.
It was still,
in the original? It was Chris Christopherson, right?
Yes.
And who was the love interest in that?
Which seems a little bit repetitive. I mean, come on, Chris Christopherson. We can't come up some more.
What were his parents doing? I would agree with that. It's a stop it.
It's
making
ridiculous.
A mockery of this poor guy.
Yeah, you panicked. They just panicked.
By the time you leave the hospital, Mrs. Christopherson, you have to have a name on the birth certificate. Just go with Chris. I don't know.
Pull one of Rico's moves and just bust out of the hospital. No name.
It's too much for me. I don't know. How about Chris? Yes, just go with Chris. Sure, whatever.
If you don't name him, we're just going to call him Chris. Okay.
That's fine. I can't take it anywhere. Just let me out of here. All right. And then also tonight, another edition. This is on Fox TV of The Tiger King, which has the potential to be terrific.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's going to be some questions answered. I'm going to be completely honest. I'm going to be transparent. I watch, you know, SportsCenter in the morning, and it's a repeat of the one they do at night. I don't know if you guys feel the same. I'm emotionally attached to SVP. Like, I miss when SVP's not doing SportsCenter.
Yes.
But, okay, I'm telling you right now, if ESPN ever asked me at some point, could you come on to SVP and answer a couple questions about the NHL plans or whatever it is, my mind is telling me that because it's a late-night SportsCenter, I would want to do the hit dressed up as either the Tiger King or the Tiger King's husband with like the fake tattoos.
Which one?
The first the original. The OG. The OG.
Oh, the guy with no teeth.
The one that has property of Joe Exotic tattooed on
it? Yeah, but I put property of SVP. I think it'd be hysterical. Oh,
that could make it a little bit awkward.
Yeah, it'd be
Why
weird,
would they not have you on just for that?
I would totally, you know, I would do it too.
You would absolutely do it.
I would have Cassie take a magic, like a marker and put all the fake tattoos on me. It'd be hysterical.
That'd be so good.
I'd have to put some on my teeth though, because he only's got like 3 or 4 teeth.
Right. If that.
Yeah, I was going high end.
Yeah. I mean, the over under might have been like one and a half teeth. That man.
He said one. Over under is one and a half.
Yeah, because one of them is it. I don't know if it counts as a full tooth when it was like dangling in a different direction.
It still counts as a tooth.
Does it?
Yeah. It doesn't.
I don't know.
It is a tooth, yes.
Yeah, that's a tooth.
Even if it's not straight, it still counts as a tooth.
So is that what you're watching tonight, the both of you? You're watching the TV not straight.
Among other things, that'll be what's on the television, yes.
That's one of the great lines in the show. Even if it's not straight, it still counts as a tooth.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny. I believe it's still, by definition, is still defined as a tooth.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. So we've been talking about this for a little bit. Let's take a listen to it. Mark Teixeira was on Golic and Wingo this morning saying MLB players wouldn't be overly concerned with the return of baseball.
Honestly, as a player, you know, and a lot of people are saying this privately, probably not as publicly, because we all want to be extremely sensitive to this thing. But players aren't as scared as probably the general population. Number one, You know, if you let me as a player back into a stadium, it's going to be a clean place. There's not going to be any, we obviously need to have some more testing. There's not going to be people with the virus all over the stadium and all over the clubhouse. We're outside for a good part of the day. Baseball, yeah, you're touching the ball and you're touching, you know, bats and stuff, but there's not a ton of physical contact in the game. So I believe players right now would feel good about going back to work. The problem is all of the support staff that it takes to put on a baseball game, from the clubhouse attendants to the trainers to all the coaches, everybody in a big stadium, all the different cameras, the technology that you need from a you know, game broadcast standpoint, I think players would be more worried about the support staff because we don't want to see anybody them get sick.
So what do you think, Chris? You agree with Teixeira on this one, that the players are gung-ho to get back and play, but it's the bigger picture that's the concern here?
Well, yeah, I think you have to worry about the support staff that are involved in terms of being able to put on baseball games. The players are going to want to get back and play because they know the more games that they play, the more of their salary that they're going to see in 2020. So that's their priority. But as we've said before, sometimes you got to protect the player from themselves, but also you got to protect the people that are in proximity to the players. And so, yeah, making sure that the support staff, the trainers, the equipment managers, all of those people, the coaches, making sure that all of those folks have the ability to stay safe amidst this pandemic, I think that has to be factored into the thinking for baseball as they try to chart forward the best path in order to get games back underway.
Yeah, I think the other thing, though, too, Dave, which is probably the scariest thing as far as baseball is, and he can say what he wants about, you know, there's not as much exposure. But, I mean, you're still talking about a baseball. You're still talking about a pitcher who puts his fingers in his mouth. And, I mean, ball's put in play. So now whoever it's hit to, they're touching the baseball. Then the first baseman's touching the baseball. I mean, there still is plenty of contact with baseball.
Yeah, I'm surprised that he says it's just, that all players, just almost like a blanket statement, it's really not much of a concern. I would think that even if you trudge ahead and go and play, you know, if it's Arizona or if it's split up between Arizona and Florida like the new conversation is, that you would still have pause, Rick, and be hesitant and say, I'm going to pick up and leave my family. I might not see them for months. I don't think this is such an easy decision for everybody.
No, I don't think it's an easy decision, but I think when you start talking about the finances involved, I mean, how it affects each player, how it affects the league this year, how it's going to affect the league next year, I mean, as far as how much revenue they're losing. I mean, just think about if you're the Mets. Think if you're the Wilpons right now, turning down that $2.6 billion offer. What is that going to look like after we're through all this?
It'll never look like $2.6 billion again, I'll tell you that.
No, but you also, I mean, take into account, too, that if baseball does decide to go with, you know, what I mentioned to Buster on Friday with, you know, a league in Arizona and a league in Florida, is every precaution necessary is going to be taken. This isn't, I mean, you guys will be tested. Like, it won't start until you're at that point where you're making it as safe as humanly possible to be playing these games. Like, everyone, and it's going to be a lot of people, everyone will have to be tested. Everyone will have to be tested negative, and then they'll have a legitimate way to make sure that if you do by chance get COVID-19, that in no way, shape, or form is it going to be life-threatening.
Because I was just operating under the assumption that everybody that'll be involved off the top will be tested and have to test negative for the virus before they can be allowed in those facilities.
Yes.
Yes, that has to be. Like, that's the starting point. But it's just about being able to maintain the safety measures in order for everybody to stay safe throughout the course of the season. That, yeah, to me, is the far more difficult part in trying to figure it out, which is why I think they have to have the ability to test these players and support staff members quickly. And this might be something where it's something almost like a daily thing that people are going through.
Yeah, I think the bigger concern is, I mean, if you do get to a point where, and maybe it's not a biodome or whatever it ends up being, I mean, it's just all it takes is one or two guys that are sick of being confined to wherever they're at that go rogue. I mean, look at the Cowboys. Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll talk about that. But it just takes one of those guys or two or whatever it is that want to go out and you know, sneak away for a couple hours, and then God forbid they get it. And then now all of a sudden it's through your entire team.
Yeah, that's why they got to have the rapid test, man. They have to have the rapid test. They have to be able to turn that around in a matter of, you know, minutes, not talking about days, in order for everybody to stay safe if they're going to actually try to play baseball games. Because there's no way you can keep people under wraps for an entire season. You know, you're talking about hundreds of people. I just don't think that that's realistic to have a plan forward that means that you're going to quarantine all of these people that are involved for months and months at a time. I just don't see that happening.
That's why, as tough as it would be, I mean, if I were to put myself right now in a Major League Baseball player's shoes and I have to have the conversation with my wife that I'm going to have to go away for whatever it is, you know, 3-4 months, whatever it is, I would actually prefer that they stayed home as opposed to being like, because I feel like me saying I'm going to do it, I know the risk going in. And then, you know, if for some reason I do get it just because of the proximity to all these people and these whoever it ends up being, I would feel a lot better just me getting as opposed to me all of a sudden taking it home. And now
you wouldn't want that. The last thing you'd want is to bring it back to your family. No, you want to be separated.
No, that's my biggest fear, man. I had this conversation the other day. Like, the more we read about this thing, too, is the more we realize that it was probably here a lot sooner than we actually thought. So could you imagine? I mean, could you have imagined back then, like, before this whole thing turned into this pandemic, is that you are, I mean, you do have it. You don't even know it. And then you bring it home and your mom gets it. And you know what I mean? And then, you know, God forbid she goes to visit your grandmother, she gets it. And then you were the one that was responsible for all that?
No.
Hell, forget that. I wouldn't want any part of that.
No, it's awful. So I think there's some sense of relief in knowing that you won't be near the people that you potentially love the most. But, you know, I don't know. It's a big undertaking for baseball to lock these guys away and to think that they won't, like you said, Chris, kind of cross that line and sneak out for God knows what at any point.
Dave, it's only been a month, and we've got issues with shelter in place here in New York City. People can't help but go out to these parks and these playgrounds. They had to shut down some parks and playgrounds.
They had to take the basketball
people wouldn't stay in their
away.
Houses.
Right?
They had to take the hoops off the basketball goals. Like, you're absolutely right. Like, it's to expect that baseball would be able to get these guys in these spring league locations and then have them quarantined for, what, 3 months, 4 months in order to have some semblance of a season? I just think that's unrealistic. I think you have to incorporate the reliable rapid testing for everybody. And when you've gotten to the point where you can provide that service for all the people involved in putting these games on, then I think you can realistically talk about them coming back.
It actually, I mean, if you sit back and you really think about the situation that baseball, the NBA, and the NHL are in currently, I'd say it's probably easier for the NBA and the NHL to get started before Major League Baseball with where they're at. Because if you go straight into the playoffs, you're talking about, you know, 16 different teams with an end in sight. It could be you losing the first round. It could be you losing the second round.
Right.
It's not a very long period of time is what you're saying.
Well, no, and if you end up being there for 2 months and you're away from your family from 2 months, that means you're playing for a championship. So you're willing to sacrifice that, as opposed to now you're sitting with no end in sight. You're playing baseball games, regular season games. Who knows how good your team is and when this thing is going to be back to where you can potentially be. It could be 2 months that all of a sudden things change. You can go back to wherever you're from and the schedule will change a little bit, but who knows?
You need to feel better about your life?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
Let's take a look at Rick's Knobservation.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
All right, fellas. A little Monday afternoon Knobservations. I'm going to go with a good story first, as we've been doing here over the last couple weeks with Knobservations. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you guys have seen this story yet or not. So, John Krasinski from The Office. We all know who John Krasinski is. Okay, so he is doing some good news on YouTube. So, in his third installment of some good news on YouTube, he paid a special tribute to the healthcare heroes around the U.S. by getting them, are you ready for this? Free cell phone service. He got them free cell phone service. Initially, he said that he was going to try to get them. He reached out to AT&T and asked them to give every nurse and doctor in America free cell phone service for a month. AT&T decided they would offer to provide free cell phone service for 3 months. So 3 months of free cell phone service for every doctor and nurse. But on top of that, what he did was he brought on David Ortiz.
I saw this one, yeah.
Yeah, he greeted 5 COVID unit workers from the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and announced that everyone at the hospital would be receiving 4 tickets to see the team for the rest of their lives.
That's crazy.
How about that? And then they took a duck boat, met the workers outside the hospital and drove them to Fenway Park, where each person got to throw out a pitch from the mound and run the bases, while Red Sox players, the mayor of Boston, and the governor of Massachusetts cheered them on from the Jumbotron.
That's awesome. It really
is. How cool is that?
That's great. And it's great to see guys that are giving back, and John Krasinski and David Ortiz and all of them. I mean, season tickets for life. That's unbelievable.
That's awesome. Yeah, that is unbelievable. Well done by him, though. Use your platform for the right things.
It's great.
I like that a lot. Speaking of using your platform, here we go. Did this happen in Florida? Woman, 27 years old, strolled into the airport, went up to Spirit Airlines counter, naked. She was completely naked.
How do you?
She was told by airline officials.
Is there security before you get into the airport?
No. No, you can walk on. This is to go get your ticket or check in. There's no security. No, you walk through the door and she walked right up to the counter.
Huh? How about that?
Straight up. She was told by airline officials that she wouldn't be able to travel in her current getup or lack thereof. and they asked her to leave. But of course, why wouldn't she? She refused. By the time a deputy arrived, the 27-year-old woman had put on a dress, but it was too short. It was too short to cover her genitals, and she was not wearing
underwear.
She
put on a child's dress. She took it off her Barbie.
She scuffled with deputies, and then then she was taken into custody. Did that happen in Florida?
Did that happen in Florida?
I mean, she got a lot of. She was booked on charges of obscenity, resisting arrest, battery of a police officer, simple battery, and remaining in a place after being forbidden. Wow.
Did that happen in Florida? Now, Spirit Airlines.
It's a laundry list.
Chris, let's think this through. Does Spirit Airlines, is that a big airline that goes to Florida? Or from
absolutely,
Florida?
Dave Rothenberg. Absolutely.
All right. Then I think we go with that happened in Florida.
Yes. I'm going to say 100% that happened in Florida.
Mr. Santiago. You do like to travel nude. Did this happen in Florida?
I am going to abstain from this one because I do know, but I will say that Spirit Airlines does scream Florida, but I'll leave it at that.
Oh, maybe she just she took it literally and she's trying to show off her spirit for flying. No, that happened in New Orleans. That was in New
what?
Orleans airport.
Oh, come on.
Come on, yeah, man.
Gulf of Mexico.
That was New Orleans.
It's Gulf of Mexico. It's in the area. It's
can
in the
you
neighborhood.
Imagine the attendant at the window. It's not a window, but at the counter, looks up and he's like, and next, and he's like, whoa.
But how does she even?
I'm pretty sure he saw her before he or she saw her before she got up to the counter.
Oh, God.
My favorite part of the whole story, though, is that they tell her no, she has to leave. She doesn't. So I mean, they call the authorities, and in her mind, you know what? I'm just going to throw this dress on. I'll be fine. It's like a little child's dress that she's got no underwear on, and just everything's still exposed.
Too good.
Can't get in trouble with this one. Here's another one. I'm not sure if you guys have seen this story or not, or how you would feel about this.
This is also Florida?
No, this is not Florida. This is just a completely separate story. Sports related.
Okay.
This involves soccer star Neymar. Neymar's mom, she is 52 years old. She had been married to Neymar's dad, who is also his agent, for 25 years. They were divorced in 2016. Would you like to guess how old Neymar's mom's current boyfriend is?
22.
He is 22 years old, and here's the best part of the
story. I got it right on the head?
Right on the head.
Wow.
So her new boyfriend, who's 22 years old, actually has revealed that he is a huge fan of Neymar and actually sent them a message in 2017. Neymar, you are fantastic. I don't know how to explain the emotion of being a fan of a guy like you. I see you playing and I'm very motivated. One day I hope to read this message with you, be your brother or your dad, and play together. I know that one day I will meet you because I am a dreamy boy where I do not give up on my goals.
Boy.
Stay with God, very successful and happy.
Oh my God.
You know, have you seen the movie Four Christmases with Vince Vaughn?
Yes.
It reminds me of remember the scene when he goes to visit his mom, and she's sitting down with her new husband.
Uh huh.
And he goes, I just want us to be friends. And Vince Vaughn goes, we were friends. We were best friends.
Yeah.
before you started sleeping with my mom.
Oh, God.
Oh, too much.
But what is she doing? A 22-year-old who's desperate to just get into Neymar's life? That's really a bad job by her.
See, but that's what makes it sketchy. But here's the thing, though. I don't think he knows this because he actually commented on her Instagram post, be happy, mom, love you.
Oh, God. I don't know.
I don't think he even realizes that this guy is, like, obsessed with him.
There's no way he doesn't know. If he's obsessed with him, there's no way he doesn't know.
He might not know until he reads this article. I hope to read this message with you, be your brother. He could end up being his dad.
Can he punish him?
I hope one day you'll call me daddy.
I guess he could.
Your mom already does.
Yeah. Oh, God, man. I couldn't even imagine that.
I want you in by 11:30, Neymar.
Wow.
I want us to be friends. Well, you were my friend until you started sleeping with my mom. did you guys see this? I know you guys saw this, but I'll bring it up because it's topical. The Dak Prescott story.
I hate this story.
I know. So local police in the Dallas suburb of Prosper actually had to go to Dak Prescott's residence after receiving a report of a potential party. Apparently, but here's the thing. If you're going to have it, being aware of the current circumstances, including the fact that the state you live in has a safer at home mandate and you wanted to have a party, why would you let anyone know? Like, why would you post pictures of you actually having the party? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't think he cares.
I find that hard to believe, man. Like,
I don't think it was Dak that posted the pictures, though. It was the people that went to the party, right?
I don't care who it was. Like, go, like, have the brace. Like, what would Derek Jeter do if you're coming to the party under these circumstances? No one posts a thing about it. Not that I'm condoning it, but if you're going to be stupid enough to have 30 people at your house,
right?
Don't have to broadcast.
But how disrespectful is it that every governor is telling their state, do not leave the house and social distance and do not gather, and this guy has the disrespect to have a party of 30 people? I mean, it's really a disgusting story.
Well, I mean, Dave, he's going about this is what he does. I mean, this is when you talk about young kids that make foolish mistakes. This is a mistake that Dak Prescott has made. This is an obvious misstep. And it's on the heels of him having the misstep earlier last week when he was throwing with Dez Bryant. Not supposed to be doing that either, but he is. But when you have young men of means with a lot of time on their hands, you worry about them making foolish decisions. And this is an example of it. But he ain't the only one.
But Chris, this is what I don't like about what Dallas is doing with Dak Prescott. I mean, this stuff I think is separate. But I mean, by not having him signed already, and like having the potential where he has to not show up to if they did have OTAs now, like all you're doing is corroding, like what he's known as being a great leader. He doesn't want to be a bad guy. Like he wants to beat all that stuff, but now he has no choice because you put him in a position where he has to make that decision. Like why are you doing this to a guy who is the unquestioned leader of your team? Like, get this thing done. Get it taken care of.
Rick, you know I don't know. I've been saying the Dallas Cowboys should have signed him last offseason. The longer that they waited, the more money it was going to cost them. It absolutely makes no sense that they haven't signed him to a contract yet.
It's ridiculous. As far as the last story for today's observations, I am nominating one Rick DiPietro for an observations today.
What'd you do now?
Yeah, I'm going to need your advice on this. I had a weird moment yesterday. So I got a tweet that they were re-showing a 2006 Islanders-Rangers game on MSG. So I'm laying in bed with Cass. I flip it on, and she says, you know what you should do? You should tape this so Milo can see it. He'll be pumped to watch you. So I tape it, and then I turn it on, and we're watching it yesterday. It was like – it was pretty much the Jaromir Jagr show. And where I taped it, it was already 3-0 Rangers. So Milo picked up on it immediately. He goes, oh, this is – I said, yeah, this is the me playing against – me and the Islanders playing against the Rangers. He goes, oh, that's great, Dad. You hate the Rangers. You guys are winning, right? And it was already 3-0, but he didn't – like he couldn't tell which team was winning. So I just blatantly lied to him. I said – he goes, are you guys up 3-0? I said, yeah, we're winning 3-0.
Now let's go throw the baseball outside.
Just blatantly lied right to his face. It's like, oh, you guys are doing good. I'm like, oh, yeah, we're up. We're up. Yep. We're winning 3-0.
I'm going to turn this off now. We win 9-0. I stop all 49 shots, and let's go shoot some hoops.
Yeah, that's what he goes. He goes, do you jump on your teammates when you win? I'm like, yep, after this game, I'll probably jump on the team.
and let's get out of here. Yeah. At least you covered it up quickly, though. You had no choice.
I don't want to think less of me.
No. I understand. He did nothing wrong.
And there you have it.
Nothing wrong. Clearly, he doesn't listen to the show. Otherwise, you'd have exposed yourself to...
That can't be the end of observations.
Uh-oh.
Well, what else we have?
Oh, you missed the one with Kyle Larson on the iRacing yesterday?
Well, I didn't want to, listen, I got four more days.
Oh, okay. All right. I was just saying one of the most egregious observations over the weekend.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll lead in observations with that story tomorrow.
Okay.
Let's do that.
I'm just saying, what was the most knobbish thing that happened over the weekend? This would have to be it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So we want to put it off
with
tomorrow.
That story.
Okay.
Tomorrow, absolutely.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.